This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
In a Boo Moon under coming events. All proceeds.
This is Black Book Talk, our February edition, and I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman, here with
Patricia Welch, the library lady,
and Obie Hill with Mirror Image Books.
February is Black History Month, and we have a wonderful author with us today, Kim Moreland, who wrote the book African Americans in Portland. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
Well, actually, it's African Americans of Portland, and it's chock full of pictures of early Portlanders and some recent contemporary Portlanders. Kim, I'm so glad you could make it to be with us, but I'm so glad you did this book.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad that you invited me to come on the show. I'm really excited to be here, and it was a fun project to work on.
Well, it's the 87th anniversary of Negro History Week by Carter G. Woodson. And so this is a perfect day to talk about your very, very interesting book.
Oh. And I look forward to sharing the information.
Well, first things first, I always want to know, how did it come about? Did you just wake up one morning and say, oh, I know there are a lot of pictures out there? Probably not. So tell us how this came about.
You know, when I was an urban planner for the city of Portland, I worked on a document called The History of African Americans in Portland from 1805 to the present. And I have a copy here for you guys. And I work with a citizen advisory committee and several local historians to create a document that highlighted the history of inner Northeast Portland. And it was such a wonderful project. It was very educational, and I just really enjoyed working on that. And when I found out about Arcadia Publishing and the pictorial history, I thought the history of African Americans in Portland would be a perfect subject for one of Arcadia's publications. So I love the pictorial history format, and I just thought this would be a wonderful way to highlight a very unique and different African-American history. And so that was one of my motivations. And I really saw this as an opportunity to educate young people about their history, because often young people really don't understand why they live in a certain area, and I think this document helped to provide that clue about, you know, you're not just here by happen chance. You know, there was a lot of things that took place in Portland and in Oregon to provide a location, you know, for you and your family. So I just think it was just a wonderful way of highlighting a really interesting history.
Kim, are you native Portlander?
No, I'm a native of Cleveland, Ohio. And my husband and I moved to Portland in 1987. We relocated to Tacoma, Washington, and we came back to the Portland metropolitan area in 2004. And so I we lived in Portland for about 10 years prior to relocating to Tacoma. And at that time, I was living in the Elliott community, and I was working on the Albina Community Plan, which was a district plan for inner Northeast Portland. And that was kind of my initial effort, or initial how I became involved with the history of African Americans in Portland.
You have quite a few historical buildings and architecture here. Could you explain where you got those pictures from and what was, for instance, coming down today, we passed the Golden West, and I see you have that in there along with an old YMCA on Tillamook and Williams.
You know, those photos came from various sources. A lot of them came from the Oregon Historical Society, and they were very intentional. I really wanted to highlight some of the resources that are still remaining in the Portland area, and I hope that one of our next steps, when I say we, the Oregon Black Pioneers, is to start documenting and preserving those historic resources that still remained in the Portland area. So sources for the book came from local archives, like Portland State University, City of Portland, University of Oregon, also Oregon State University, and the Oregon Historical Society, along with private family collections. I believe those private family collections really enhance the richness of the document.
I have a question. You said you became aware of Arcadia Publishing. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. When I moved back to the Portland area, I was hired as an urban planner with the City of Salem. And one of my coworkers, who was the historic preservation planner for the City of Salem, was an Arcadia publisher. And she wrote a history document for the City of Hillsborough, which was published by Arcadia Publication. And so when you submit a proposal to Arcadia, you have to have to tell them why this subject would be relevant for their publication, and you have to also provide them with background about the history. And so you're submitting a book proposal to Arcadia Publishing, and Arcadia has an African American series. So if you go on their line online to the website arcadiapublishing.com, you can see the history of African Americans in Denver, African Americans in St. Louis, African Americans in various cities around the country. And I.
Okay.
And so that's how I was kind of inspired to do this. And
okay, so that's what I thought, because I am pretty sure that I have a copy of a book that was published by that company. It's on the city of Baltimore, because they all sort of look alike. So that's what I was wondering. Okay. I know that you did a lot of the work, but in reading your introduction and acknowledgments, my sense is that you certainly had others in an organization behind you. So could you talk a little bit about who were your partners in this?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. And I really wanted to mention that the Oregon Black Pioneers was my partner the other author for this document. And all the donations from this book will support our efforts to establish an Oregon African American Museum. And they have, helped pay for some of the photos. And so it was a joint effort. And I'm one of the board members of the Oregon Black Pioneers, and I submitted a proposal to them to move forward with this, and they were on board with that.
So how many years ago were you on the part of the planning for the Albina area?
It was from like 1989 to 1993, and I believe the Albina Community Plan was adopted in 1993.
And are we in the middle of it at this point?
No, it has been completed, adopted, implemented, really. It kind of was a stimulus of some of the revitalization in Northeast Portland. And so I think actually at this point it has kind of been revised, and some of the action steps have been, most of them probably have been implemented at this point. It was a very successful effort, but It also has the kind of the gentrification element that happened as a result of some of the planning efforts. But, it's a very complex situation. But the Bonnet Community Plan was, a district plan to help stimulate the revitalization in that area.
And I'm wondering if while the planning was going on, were photographs taken of the community as it was, or are they stored somewhere?
You know, there are several archives that I mentioned before, that, and the city of Portland has an archive, and they have, photos of the Memorial Coliseum area before the Memorial Coliseum was constructed. Mm-hmm. And they probably would be the one that would have, some of the early photos of the city of Portland and inner northeast Portland.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO, and our guest is Kim Moreland. Tell me, in financing of this venture, you've had several sources, and somewhere I read there was a very nice article in the Portland Observer, and explained that you went out of the state in order to get some information.
Yes, it was really a lot of fun investigating some of the history of the local of the Portland pioneers, because I found out that many of them migrated to Portland from other areas, and oftentimes they were the leader where they came from. So I was able to go back to their hometown and find photos or evidence that they were leaders in their previous community. For instance, McCann Stewart, who was Portland's first black lawyer, he actually graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1899. And so I was able to approach the University of Minnesota library and archives, and they had his photo when he graduated from law school. So I was able to use that photo for the book. And also, I was able to find documentation about a Victorian resident who actually left Portland and moved to Victoria in 1860. And he actually became a city council member for the city of Victoria in 1865. So I wasn't able to access his photo, but I was able to access his article about when he was elected to the city council.
Well, this moving around, was that because of the exclusion laws and policies here in the state of Oregon?
Oftentimes, African Americans didn't settle in this area because of the exclusion laws. Some of them went to Washington Territory, and like George Bush, who settled in the Centralia area. And the example of the guy who moved to Victoria, he was discouraged by Oregon's exclusion laws. His name was Abner Francis Hunt, and him, his brother, and his wife were subject to being excluded from the territory, but several white citizens stood up on their behalf and asked for an exemption. And so they were able to stay, and they did become very wealthy because they had a merchant business. But because of the anti-black sentiment, he wanted to move to an area that was more friendly to African Americans. And so that's why he migrated to Victoria, Canada.
I was thinking, as someone else who's not born in Portland, sometimes when you're a transplant, you're even more interested in the history of the area that you live in because you don't take it for granted. And when you said that you wanted to capture some of the treasures, when I looked through here and saw the name Myrtle White Carr, I'm like, Miss Carr, I know Myrtle Carr. And of course, this is taken a number of years ago. I've always known that Myrtle Carr was a devoted volunteer for the Urban League, but I had no idea that she was a League employee. And I just love seeing her and seeing it. It's pictured as Myrtle White Carr with Dolores Casanosis. Carr, a longtime Urban League employee, received recognition for 20 years of service in 1965. And then it mentioned that her husband was the first African-American to work for the Portland Fire Bureau. These are the kind of things that, you know, people who grew up with Mrs. Carr or around Mrs. Carr would know. Mm-hmm. But for somebody else, it's like, wow, you know, you look through and you're like, I see this person. And some of these pictures seem to be, you know, very official. And then others just seem to be like this one, probably just a photo that somebody took at some event. So could you tell us a little bit more about, mm-hmm. first, you know, how you conceived of how you wanted the book to flow, mm-hmm. you know, so that people who have not had a chance to look at it will kind of know what to expect and the ways, maybe the less official ways that you got some personal photos.
Sure. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was thinking about organizing the photos, I had two audiences in mind. I had one audience of people who don't know the histories. So you have more of the surface history, the first black lawyer, the first black doctor. But then I had a second audience in mind of the people who lived here. I wanted them to see themselves. I wanted them to see their family on the page. And so it may not seem important to somebody who not from the area, but somebody who lives here will really enjoy seeing their family members, because really when you look at community development and community building, it's really the folks who live here who have contributed to the quality of life that we enjoy today. And I, so that I really did have those two audiences in mind, and it actually have played itself out. I met a wonderful woman named Gloria Cass Campbell, who was a Gals Lake residents, and she saw herself as a little girl on the pages of the book. And so now we are becoming, you know, friends, and I hope to work with her in the future. And she's so excited about seeing her family, and that really brought me a lot of joy.
But also, I think that's particularly important here in Portland, because in many ways, African Americans are still so invisible in certain areas. And to see your face in a book, if, you know, if somebody has printed something about you, then it means that you're important. It validates you. It's like having a newspaper that you know is going to carry your picture because you're important. So I just think that this book says something important about the purple, says something important about the people who live here, and says something important to the people who are in it. So I just think in that way, it's a great gift to the African American community.
You mentioned the future. Is there a plan to extend this book to add more recent history?
No, not officially. It's been, I've talked to several people who would love for that to happen, but there's no official plan to move in that direction, but I would definitely be open to that. And you had mentioned earlier about the flow of the book, and I borrowed a lot of the chapter titles from the history document that was produced with the City of Portland. But I also wanted to talk about some of the contemporary history and some of the leaders that have come into our area and who are still the first, like Dr. Preston, who is the first black president of Portland Community College.
Preston Pulliam?
Preston Pulliam, sorry. And so I did want to, you know, highlight some of the newer leaders, and I also wanted to highlight how the leadership changed in the 50s and the 60s, where we became a little bit more militant, a little bit more, you know, going against the norm. And so you had, you know, leaders like Ron Hurden and the Black United Front, and out of that grassroots effort, several politicians arose, Portland has such a rich history, and there's so many areas that you could expand on. And I hope that someone reading this book will say, man, we really need to talk about the political history of African Americans in Portland and in Oregon. And maybe they would, you know, someone would create a document that talks about that political history. And I just really, as I was writing it, there were so many things that I wanted to expand on, but I hope that somebody else would take the ball and run with it.
You mentioned the museum project that a group is working on. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes. The Oregon Black Pioneers established kind of a a secondary organization called the Oregon African American Museum. We was established in 2007 and to move forward with creating a museum in the state of Oregon. And our efforts is focusing on the city of Salem. And we would like to have African American Museum in Salem so that we can have a presence at the state capitol. And the Oregon Black Pioneers is a nonprofit statewide organization that's based in the city of Salem. And we are hoping to kind of build on our successes with the exhibit that opened in February, which is the All Aboard Railroading in Portland's Black Community. And that we will be able to establish some support for a museum in the city of Salem. And we are, it's a blooming effort, as the Portland Observer article says, is that because we've been busy kind of establish our foundation, our mission, our vision for the museum, and we're going to be moving full steam in the coming years to establish a museum in the city of Salem.
Let's see. In closing, are there any just remarks that you'd like to? Is there another question?
I had another question.
Go ahead.
The annual dinner that Black Pioneers sponsors in Salem each year, is that to raise money toward the museum?
It's not specifically targeted towards the museum, but it supports our scholarship effort.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO.
Okay. Kimberly, is any closing remarks that you'd like to make, and just in terms of what you want people to know about the book, your effort?
Yes. I would like to say that this is just a snapshot of the history of Portland. It's not meant to be a comprehensive pictorial history of the city of Portland. And I know there are some things that are probably missing from the document, but I hope that the citizens see this as a gift and that something to build upon, and I look forward to working on more projects in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and this is, of course, Black History Month, and I'm trying to just sort of remind myself of it by recognizing something important that happened every day of the month. So for today, I want to share with you that on February 7th in 1883, James Hubert U.B. Blake was born. U.B. Blake was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and he went on to become a revered ragtime pianist and composer for American musicals. He entered into a partnership with singer-songwriter Noble Sissel in 1950, and the two would work together on the 1921 musical Shuffle Along, featuring the mega hit I'm Just Wild About Harry, which people hummed, probably had no idea who wrote it, where it came from, whatever. People are probably still humming that song somewhere now. Blake composed hundreds of songs and received many accolades. He died in Brooklyn, New York on February 12th, 1983, so he lived to be 100 years old. And if you go to YouTube and you simply put in U.B. Blake, you'll get a lot of videos, but two that I thought were great. One is a very young James Earl Jones, the actor, interviewing U.B. Blake. And Blake is so funny when he talks about the difference between what happens when African-American musicians are in official situations where they play just, you know, whatever is the scripted music, and then later on when they come back and play ragtime, and he gives you an example. And then there's another video of him, and I think he was 90 when James Earl Jones interviewed him, and probably somewhere in his 90s when he does the second. And again, he does an introduction to a song that he's going to play. I mean, he is such a lively, vibrant 90-some-year-old that you can see how he had this wonderful, wonderful life. So I would hope that, you know, all of us are thinking about what's happening now, but also what happened in African-American history throughout the year, because every day is African-American history. Every day there's some facet of somebody's history that is important, and we're always making history, but I think this is a time for reflection. And also, there are so many things that are going on this month. I know about some of them, and if anybody else wants to chime in, but I did want to mention that tomorrow, let's see, Okay. Tomorrow evening, I think is the first performance of African American Growing Up Mulatto. This will be, performances will be Fridays and Saturdays, starting tomorrow the 8th and ending on Sunday the 24th. And this is basically an exploration of what it means to be Black, what it means to be biracial. And I think this is an issue of a lot of importance to many people. So I hope that people will, you know, take a look at that. Sunday at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 3:30, the African American Read-In returns to the North Portland Library. And it's an opportunity for you to hear members of the community reading excerpts from works by their favorite African American authors. And then right after that, at 3 o'clock at the June Key Delta House, it's going to be another in the series of programs around All Aboard Railroading in Portland's Black Community, which is the exhibit that is taking place at the Oregon Historical Museum. But the program on Sunday will be from 3:30 to 5:30, and it's called Free at Last, Let the Elders Point the Way. And it'll be William Woods, Minnie Bell Johnson, Aletha Chavis, Bill Hilliard, and Myrtle Carr. I did not know this when I mentioned it, moderated by Donna Maxey. Anything else that anybody else knows about that's happening?
Yes, I'd like to chime in here. On Wednesday, February the 20th at 6 p.m. at the St. John's branch of library, they're going to have a Conversations project entitled Why Aren't There More Black People in Oregon? A Hidden History. I believe that will be a real interesting project to attend.
Yes, I've been to one of those. It is a great program. So much else is happening. Hope you enjoy Black History Month. And this is the Library Lady signing off, saying hope we'll see you again, or you'll hear us again next month.
Obi Hill with Reflections, Mirror Image Books.
Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman. See you in March.
And we're going to close with a little ragtime.
By you. Yes.
This is the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 7th, 2013. I'm Jenka Soderberg. The Portland Police Bureau announced today that it will again delay a report on its involvement in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, a controversial national program that links local law enforcement with the FBI and other investigative agencies as part of the so-called War on Terror. Public opposition to the Joint Terrorism Task Force led the Portland City Council to pull out in 2009. But the city rejoined the program in 2011, supposedly on a restricted basis and with the requirement that the police bureau provide the city with a report in January of each year. But last year's report was indefinitely delayed, and this year's report is being delayed as well. Local citizens' advocacy groups have demanded that police provide the report, particularly because the Portland police are currently under scrutiny due to a federal lawsuit for excessive use of force. In Los Angeles this morning, thousands of police have been deployed to track down one of their fellow officers who has gone on a shooting rampage after he was fired from his job. At least one person has been killed already. In an online posting, the officer said that he would target other officers who wronged him. The Portland Area Transit Agency TriMet has reached an agreement with the bus drivers union on a plan to limit driver fatigue. The issue came to light several weeks ago in an expose by the Oregonian newspaper, which found that drivers were working up to 22 hours in a 24-hour period, and many were driving buses in a state of extreme tiredness. Under the new agreement, which is temporary until a contract is finalized, drivers will be required to have a 10-hour break between shifts, and fill-in drivers will also need to have a 9-hour break between shifts. For more local, national, and international news, tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News, produced by volunteers right here in our Portland studios. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
And you're tuned to Community Radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany, K220 Hood River, and K264 AA.